Well, good morning.
Glad to be here today.
I'm from Berks County. Not Lebanon County. Not Lancaster County. Berks County. For those who live in Berks, that matters, right? We're just across the line. I'm married. We have 7 children. 3 grandchildren. 2 more due this fall, just a few weeks apart from each other, or 2 married daughters. We do not have any adopted children, adopted brother-in-law, but no adopted children. I taught school for, I think, 26 years, and the last 6 years or so, I am working part-time for Christian Light as a rep. So I get into just a few schools here that I recognize some people, your children. And then I keep bees for the other half. So that's sort of my recreation. Gets me away from the computer and my desk and those type of things. So about half the time a beekeeper and half the time still kind of in the school world, which I really do enjoy for sure. Little story. First of all, a man was lost while driving through the country. As he tried to reach for the map, he accidentally drove off the road into a ditch. Though he wasn't injured, his car was stuck deep in the mud. So the man walked to a nearby farm to ask for help. "Warwick can get you out of that ditch," said the farmer, pointing to an old mule standing in the field. The man looked at the decrepit old mule and looked at the farmer, who just stood there repeating, "Yep. Old Warwick can do the job." The man figured he had nothing to lose. The two men and the mule made their way back to the ditch. The farmer hitched the mule to the car. With a snap of the reins, he shouted, "Pull Fred, pull Jack, pull Ted, pull Warwick." And the mule pulled the car right out of the ditch. The man was amazed. He thanked the farmer and patted the mule and asked, "Why did you call out the names of all those names before you called Warwick?" The farmer grinned and said, "Oh, Warwick is just about blind. As long as he believes he's part of a team, he doesn't mind pulling." Obviously, that's not to suggest that you are mules or that you can be deceived as easily as poor Warwick was deceived. But we do know that we do best when we work with other people and when we're part of a team. Sometimes we use the word synergism, the power of people working together. The Bible talks a lot about, a number of passages, about being part of a team, the significance of that, why there is a team of people in the church believers community. I would like to read just a few verses emphasizing that, even though we won't spend much time here. In Ephesians chapter 4, 3 verses. "And he gave some," here are the different people in the team in a church, "apostles, and some prophets, and some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers." Why did God give these different gifts to the church? If you think of people in your church, in your world, yeah, he's this, he's this. Why did God give these different gifts? Well, it's answered, isn't it? For, or because of. Is this how you see the people in your world? "For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man," isn't that the desire for our children, "unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ." Why the team? So that you and I, as we partner with our schools, with our people around us, and our children, the goal is ultimately to become like Christ, isn't it? So we are a body in our community. We are a body by virtue of diversity. Right? Physically, I'm a body by virtue of diversity. I couldn't be a body if I would not have diversity. All these different parts that compositely make a body. So in your community, with your school, with the relationship with the people around you, we can function because of diversity. But that diversity turns around and threatens to destroy us. So the very thing that allows us to function and God intended so we can do well can be the very thing, though, then that turns around and creates these problems that we face and creates tension. That's just how it is. We need to embrace that. But let's not reject the very thing that allows us to be a body and gives us opportunity to do well and to hopefully not just survive, but to thrive. I had mixed emotions as I watched, I just want to say this briefly, as I watched all these children come up. I was saddened somewhat as I just thought of all the stories of those dear children that I don't know. And you don't know lots of the other stories, I'm sure. All that those children have faced, some of them. I was also just humbled to think of you, dear parents, embracing what you've chosen love. I just like that term, it's so beautiful. Chosen love, not knowing what life will give. That's about as pure love as you can find, isn't it? Embracing an opportunity to help somebody, not knowing the outcome in a special way. I just want to bless you for being the hands and feet of Jesus in a way that God has given you that opportunity. I just think so often in these situations, and of course, I'm in the school world, so I work with children, families, and trauma children in particular, just think they're being given an opportunity that they would not have if somebody wouldn't have taken the opportunity that God has given you. Just want to bless you for that. And a journey that I'm sure often feels lonely. All right, back to the team. I'm suggesting in the school world now, back to that, obviously there's different parties. The body in the school sense now being made of the different players. We have the parents, we have teachers, and we have a school board. All looking at this child. What can we learn already from the drawing?
Teamwork.
Multiple players. What else?
Authority,
okay. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, that's a tough one, authority. Who's got it? Where does it lie? We'll get to that later, of course.
Pressure.
Pressure. Oh boy, coming up with some big words.
Multiple viewpoints.
Ah, there we go. Multiple viewpoints. The angles that we're looking at this child. This really matters. And I want to encourage us to spend some time today thinking about these angles. Okay. As you look at any child, give me some components of their development that we care about. We care about them. Give me a few categories.
Emotionally.
And? Spiritually. And?
Intellectually.
And?
Socially.
And?
Physically.
And one we didn't say yet, if this would be a room full of teachers, they would have said it. Academically. This is very fascinating. It took 6 tries to get to that word. When I talk to teachers, that's number one. When you think of children development, what do you think of academics? See, that's significant. We all care about all of these components with these children. We all care about all of them. We should. But can you see the tendency for different people to care a little bit more about one than the other? Which one rests so heavily on your minds as parents as you think of the vulnerability of sending your child to school? I understand that, having sent children to school. But I would acknowledge that You may have faced some vulnerabilities that are beyond what I faced. I hope I'm saying that kindly, and this is not saying judgmentally or harshly at all. What comes to your mind?
Socially.
Yeah, that's the word I was after. How's this going to look? Are they going to have friends?
They're already insecure, and they look at these authority figures pointing at them.
Yes.
That could either add to
it. Right, right. Will sending them to school destroy my child? Will it make it worse? And they'll be more confused and insecure. So many, many questions. Will a teacher like my child? Reminds me of, can't quite think where I was, but one of the mothers was speaking about her child, adopted child, and just in tears she said, I just want the people to love my child. Already broke my heart hearing her say that. I just want people to love my child. Because of the needs her child brought to the school. So, teachers, well, of course, they care about the social and the emotional, but sort of their job is around the academic, right? The school board is looking at it from a little different angle yet. They're looking at what spiritual oversight look like. What about the resources that we have in our school, and what can we afford? So we all have our own glasses. I like my glasses. I get up early in the morning and I read my Bible. I go search these things down if they're not right where they're supposed to be. Because when I put these glasses on, I mean, it just is like, oh, that's how it is. I have a lot of confidence in these things. It brings clarity. If you would tell me that what I'm reading, oh no, it says this. But no. I got this. That's what it says. But see, your glasses and my glasses are just not the same, are they? They're just not the same. And I have a compulsion to wipe the smudges off of your glasses so you can just see it like it really is. We got a lot of people with their paper towels and handkerchiefs trying to wipe up the glasses of other people so they get it. Because it's so obvious. What shapes your glasses?
Past experience.
Yes. Past experiences. That is just huge. How many of you look back at how you thought about things just a few years ago, maybe 5, 10, and you cringe because experience has significantly changed your glasses? Well, anybody like that in this room? You got to be kidding. What do you think you're going to think in 5 years from now about what you think today? You walked very nicely into that one, didn't you? It works every time. Yeah, I cringe too. I started teaching in 89. I'm just slightly older than I look. Teach school will keep you young. I had an adopted child that year. Taught many adopted children through the years because we had about, in a large school of 100 some, I think about 10%. I just cringe. I just, what I thought, and I realize that what I think now, I'm going to keep changing. Hopefully be less wrong. Hopefully be less wrong on things that I think now. So appreciate the fact that I think what I do because of experiences, and nobody else has that exact set of experiences. It's just a huge one. What else shapes these glasses? And if we're going to work well with our schools, and we'll get to some very practical things, but I just want to just back up and think a little broader first of all. What else shapes our glasses? Experiences and?
Worldviews.
Our worldviews, yes. Just our exposure, how we think of things in a broad way. Places we've been. How we see people. What else? Yes, a huge one. Our upbringing. Background. What about our personality? That plays in some way. Personalities. We've got different ways of, you know, handling things. That makes life quite interesting, doesn't it? Because that really is significant. And according to the drawing up here, what else makes a difference? Yes, who I am in the story. Who I am. Wow, did life ever shift when I had children in school? And now I'm the parent. I taught school a handful of years, of course, till I would have had children in school, 7, 8, 10, whatever it was. Boy, now when the phone rang, and it was Mr. So-and-so calling, that is vastly different than it me calling the parent. So when I was the teacher versus I was the parent, of course it looked different, vastly different. And I did get some of those phone calls. So in this, obviously, if we have these different positions, we have different responsibilities. We talk, like maybe a modern way of saying it, about staying in your lane. Have you heard people say that? Well, you need to stay in your lane. Well, what's your lane? How do you know what your lane is? See, this is where we do run into a lot of challenges in our schools. What's my lane? And what's not my lane? And I have the compulsion to control other people's lanes. Parents, let's be honest with this one. We have the compulsion to control other people's lanes. Because, because these things I really like. And I have an enormous confidence in these things. And if only other people could just get it. Such a blessing. The compulsion to control. So how do I know what my lane is? Thinking of my lane as being my set of responsibilities in the life of my child. When you send them to school, you're acknowledging that there's other lanes now in the life of my child, of which I cannot fully control. And maybe I should actually not control too much because it's not my lane. So my responsibilities, my lane, how do I know what my lane is? If I'm responsible for something, apparently I have what? Yes. I find that to be so helpful in my world. Is that my responsibilities are defined by my authority. I'd encourage you parents to think about that. When I don't have authority over a sphere that's even in the life of my child, then I actually don't, I'm not responsible to control it because I don't have the authority. And a lot of challenges come when we try to reach our arms into a world in which we don't have authority. And we try to take some control over it because it's my child, and I understand my child, by the way, of course. And there's some truth to that. But when I try to control in unhealthy, dominating ways, but it's not my responsibility, and I know it's not because I don't have authority there. Is that making sense? I'd really like to hear some questions later. We do have a question and answer. And I know I'm saying things that I'm sure half of you, if not all of you, are saying, but you don't, I know I don't understand. I know I don't. I easily acknowledge that. And I make some very general statements. I hope there's something in it, though, that you can think about, even though I realize I am simplifying it to some degree. So the questions get rather complex. Some of us were talking about this just before we came over here, and I want to take a little bit of time to think about the complexity that this creates in our schools. Is there's always multiple layers to consider. There's multiple components, and I'm looking at now this from a little different angle, maybe from a little more of the school side. But there's always, I'm going to suggest, three or four questions that must be looked at in these situations with our children in school. One is, what is best for my child? But can you understand that is sort of a one-dimensional question? That's the question that the parents ask. And it's a good question. But it is not the only question. What happens is, when we take a question and make it the question, do you understand what I'm saying by that? When we take a question, what is best for my child in this situation? But if we make that the question, almost like the only question, but there's other questions. See, the teacher has some questions too from her perspective, his perspective. The school board has some questions from their perspective. And one of the challenges is to understand and respect and appreciate that there's multiple questions here. So indeed, one is, what is best for this child? Academically, socially, emotionally, spiritually, what's the best here? A good question that you are in a good position to discuss, of course, because you're the parent. But it's just not, it's not the only question. Another question certainly is, and of course I deal with this more from a school standpoint, is what is best for the class? What about the whole classroom? Oh, there's 8 students, there's 10 students, there's 15 students. Of course, in my world, I see this a lot, where, you know, it would actually be good for that child to be in the room socially. I could, it's really good things here. But there's the teacher with minimal experience, possibly, or just the fact that there's so many needs. And please, parents, I'm trying to be very kind about this. If there's 10 students, each student should get 10% of the teacher's time and energy and emotional, right? All right. It's okay when a student takes 20. That's okay. Probably. Everybody else gets a wee bit less. But what about if it takes 80? Now we're really shrinking the energy going to the other student because my child takes 80. Just always constant, always there. What's going on? Monitoring, monitoring. What's happening? A lot of energy, monitoring, and academically. And now the other parents are saying, nothing against the child, nothing against the parent, but my child does come home saying, my hand just doesn't get answered. The teacher just doesn't seem to see. My child's really struggling. So there's other questions. What's best for the class? Health of the class. There's also, of course, a question, what's best for the teacher? What can he handle? What can she handle? There's teachers who quit on the dime. Unfortunately, I see these things happen. Just one day, I'm done. Because there wasn't that question taken into consideration. Can the teacher handle the emotional drain that a child can bring to the classroom? And suddenly, because of poor communication and poor understanding, it was over in 24 hours. And people look back and say, how did we miss this? Or teachers not coming back. That is not an uncommon thing. And of course, there's the question that the board has above all of that is, what resources do we have in our school? That's another question. Yes, it would be really good to have some one-on-one help, but our school's full. We don't have a second room. We don't have the money. You might say, oh, come on, money, please. Well, I know. Boards often are incredibly gracious, but sometimes they're not so gracious. And I'm sorry about that, but it does happen. Especially, and I say this very carefully and kindly, especially if it's a non-member patron. I see this a good bit. It's like, well, they don't feel the obligation. And I have no idea. I'm just trying to speak broadly again. Just keep that in mind. Non-member patrons, if you have a church school, now this varies. There's, you understand structures, right? There's, you know, Christian schools that are very, very broad. They're helping many families from many different churches. There's schools that have dozens of different churches. One school I can think of in our area, I think they said 40 different churches. It's in there. But there are 100 and some or whatever. They're a big school, almost 200 students. Well, there, the question isn't so much, are you a member of this particular church? But if it's a church-run school, then the school board looks a little more like, well, what's our responsibility to this family? Maybe it shouldn't be that way, but I'm just saying factually, it is that way. So they're also looking at it from, they're adding a fourth question. What's best for the student? What's best for the class? What's best for the teacher? Or I should say manageable, maybe. But wait a minute, what about the resources? Do we have the resources to make this work? And sometimes we need to accept that they do not have the resources, or they don't feel they have the resources. So the board needs to consider all those complexities as they try to work through this. Trust. Let's talk about trust just briefly. Just a couple little points here, and then I want to get into some very practical things as well. Trust is fragile. Do you trust your schools? Should you trust your schools? What does trust look like? If you're going to trust your school, does that mean you give up all your thinking, sort of, and say, well, wisdom is found in the composite of the school, meaning the board and the teachers and everybody else out there? Do you have anything to say about that? I'd like to know. How do you navigate trust?
Vulnerability.
Okay, so you're saying we should be willing to be vulnerable. Very good. What else? Okay, that's true. They're not here for me to talk to, for you to hear that.
Could you repeat the question?
What's that?
Could you repeat
the question? How do we navigate the trust question? Like, do you trust your board? Should you trust them? What if you're sure that they're wrong? Do you trust them anyhow? And say, well, I must be wrong. Because that's what the board decided. And the teachers, so I guess I'm wrong. Or do you tenaciously hang on to your opinion because I know I'm right? I mean,
communication.
Okay.
Communication.
When you think you are, communicate again.
Okay. Communicate some more. What? To win so that they understand? No. We'll get to that actually soon. But thank you for mentioning that now. We certainly will get to communication. So I think my next point. So is it, I just don't know how to navigate this trust one, because I see it as almost the underpinnings of all healthy relationships. You know that. Trust is at the underpinnings of all healthy relationships. Can you trust somebody you disagree with? So I think that's where we have some tension here. We don't see this eye to eye, but can I still trust them? Or do I need to pull trust away because you don't get it? See, and I'm not in your shoes, but I acknowledge, and I think it would be fair to say that you in a sense have a protection around your children. Was the word fierce used? I like that word. More of a fierce love, a fierce protection, because they have suffered enough. And they've been misunderstood enough. And I don't want to add any more pain to my child. I respect that. Please don't hear me being critical of that. But it can be a trap as well. Can you understand that? It can also be the downside. And so I applaud you as parents, and I respect that. That you do know your child better than anybody else. But can closeness also create some blindness? See, some people saying yes, some other people are probably saying no. No, we all know we're supposed to say yes. But see, it's hard to see because it's blindness. So if it's blindness, I don't get it. But at least if we can acknowledge that, parents, I would encourage you to think about that. Can closeness create some blindness? That's not being ugly, it's just factual. Yes.
I think the relationship between the And I think as parents, we should sometimes give the teacher the benefit of the doubt for a little bit and not just jump in and give our opinion or maybe our view of what we see. But I find that the longer the teacher's in the classroom with your child, if you work on that communication, that relationship, trust follows. And when you have that trust and that friendship and relationship with the teacher, or when you have that relationship, we can trust each other a lot more.
So what do you...
Standing behind your teacher is huge. As parents, I think that does so much for the school.
So what are you trusting? I'd like to drill down on this just a little bit more. When you say, I trust the school, I trust the teacher, what are you trusting? Are you trusting their glasses?
You can trust someone's heart without necessarily agreeing with
them. Oh, that's it right there. So what I want to encourage us to think about is how quickly we shift from we're not quite sure about their judgment here. I mean, they don't really understand my child. I mean, come on, they don't have adopted children. It's a first-year teacher. They just don't understand. That's probably true. And so you don't really trust everything they're saying. That's okay. To at least be careful with that. Right? Oh, I'm sure I'm wrong. But no, you might not be wrong. You might be, but you might not be. You do understand your child better than other people. At least most of the time, in most ways. But in my own heart, I see how quickly I slide from that to not trusting their heart, not trusting their integrity. And when we do that, parents, it's soon over. It's soon over. Sometimes it cannot be redeemed. And unfortunately, that happens in our circles. Think of an email. This is not a situation I'm connected with. Back and forth a little bit with a teacher out of state, and the conclusion was, this thing might be over. The trust was so broken, and the accusations so rampant. It's not salvageable, because it went from we don't trust how the school sees it to accusations that were appalling. See? Can you see in your own heart? I can see it in mine. How quickly I tend to slide from I don't really agree with how it's being handled. No, wait a minute. To shoo, we don't trust our heart. And that is a level in which things collapse. So I would encourage you, if I can say it this way, to err on the side of trust. Not blindly, but at least hang on as long as you can. To trust that everybody in the situation wants what's best. And they are probably looking at some components that I'm not really understanding, maybe. The board's looking at resources. The teacher is looking at what can she handle in her class. I'm sort of looking at my child. And in that, we are looking at this differently. I might be wrong, but I might be right. But at least I do believe that everybody wants to make this work. Now, it's not always that way. But I would suggest it is usually that way. Usually. But I will say, it is not always. There are times that teachers and boards get to the place where the best interest is no longer in mind because of frustration. That does happen. But generally, all parties want what's best in the situation. All right, back a little more to communication. There's this famous saying by Stephen Covey. Probably some of you have heard it. Seek first to understand and then to be understood. See, we have a lot of communication. When you think of communication, when I think of communication, I think of the ability to communicate what's on my mind and make you understand what I am thinking. Isn't that what you think about? We've got to communicate with the school. Communicate with the school. I have to talk to the school. I got to share how it looks to us. I want to do it kindly, but I have to communicate. Pick up the phone and talk. Write a note. Stop in. Communicate, communicate. But what about them communicating with me? It's amazing how many seminars there are and workshops on communication. And a lot of it surrounds convincing people how things are. Being a good salesman. How to sort of manipulate people, maybe even. I mean, I just think about it. I've done, you know, obviously in my school world, a lot of workshops on communication. But I've never been asked to talk about how to listen well. Never. So I chose it one time. It was in Canada, I believe, some seminars up there. And I chose one that was listening skills. It was so good for me to work through it myself. And do I even learn to listen? See, when we communicate and we're wanting to get this point across, we're hoping that they are receptive to what we're saying, right? But what about when it swung the other way and now they are talking and we're supposed to be listening because we really want to understand their perspectives, not just communicate our perspective. Seek first to understand. I really encourage you with this, parents, to have a disposition when you walk into a meeting, when you talk to the teacher, when you're on the phone, every time you communicate, your disposition is, what can I learn about what we're facing here? Help me understand your perspective. It doesn't take long in talking to somebody to know if that's their disposition, right? If it is almost talking top of you, it's what they want to get communicated versus, help me understand how we can be a better parent. Or help me understand, from your perspective, what are some of the needs that you're seeing in my child that we should be aware of? Or that we can do differently as parents? And mean it. Mean it in a genuine way. Versus, obviously, swung the other way. The Bible says, when we do communicate then, that... trying to get this exactly, the words right. It's in Colossians 4, verse 6. Let your speech be always seasoned with grace and with salt. Doesn't it say that? Salt. I brought some salt along. I mean, salt is pretty amazing stuff, right? My wife made some pizza the other evening, and I love big, some of you don't, big raw tomatoes on the top. You know, it's a certain recipe, and so I sprinkled a little more salt on top before I, because salt on those tomatoes really matter. I mean, salt redeems a lot of things. I think it redeems every food except one, liver. You cannot redeem, what's that?
Bacon.
And bacon, all right. We can all add to this list, I bet.
Bacon,
but for me.
Bacon redeems the liver.
Oh, bacon redeems the liver. I thought maybe salt. It's like, wow, okay. Ooh, maybe I should try that. But salt redeems a lot of things. Put some salt on it. Parents, before you talk to the parent, before you get out, how can I salt this? How can I say it in a way that is gracious, that is humble, that is not accusatory? All those things. Salt it, salt it. It does use a word in that verse. It's the word always. Always. I find that an enormous challenge. When I talk to my wife, always, now wait, sprinkle that down. Say it carefully. When I talk to my children, wait a minute, salt it down. Something went wrong, something broke, something, salt it down. Before I say, didn't you think about what's going to happen? If you don't salt it down. Just salt. Keep this salt shaker with you wherever you go. And salt it down before you say it, because once you've said it without the salt, it is pretty hard to back out, isn't it? Oh, we can apologize, and people accept that. We better know how to apologize very quickly and freely. But it's better to not need the salt afterward. So just encourage us to think about that. I would encourage us to communicate early rather than thinking no news is good news. That's a little bit how we tend. We're busy, right? So in the school context again, communicate early. Small problems, small solutions. Big problems, you know the rest, right? And sometimes there seems to be big problems that came out of almost nowhere. But generally, we can go back and say, oh, we just left that thing go, we just ignored it, we just thought it might go away. And after a while, it does become a big problem. So what are ways that you find, like just a little input here quickly, what are ways that you find that you can communicate with your school? Like how do you do it to keep an open communication? Do you have particular things you do? Say, this we really have found helpful. I'd really like to hear.
Well,
Okay. Thank you.
Just checking in,
giving an update. Yeah. And hopefully communicating good things too.
Yeah.
Not just always what's going wrong. See, that's what we tend to do.
It goes the other way as well.
Sure. But you communicate. All right, so just those quick text. How's it going? Do you realize, parents, when you ask, I'm saying this from a teacher standpoint now again, when a parent comes to me and just says, hey, how's it going? Anything? I will say something so much quicker, even over a small thing, than I would have picking up the phone and calling. Because now it's sort of making a big deal, right? All right, call in the parent. Yes, is your husband there? You know, right away. Yes.
They're likely not going to call you with problems.
So true. Thank you.
They know that you work with the problem.
Mm-hmm.
They have that trust, well, I can call again about
Thank you. And especially, again, if you're the one reaching out and just saying, how's it going? So if you don't want to do this every time you meet them necessarily, but if you're quick to open that door of communication versus, well, if they want to talk about my child, it's going to take a phone call. You know, they need to make the move. Just you opening the door, I think, gives an inviting disposition that is very encouraging to the teacher. Some schools use a journal. I've seen that a good bit in the school where I was for years. The special ed teacher worked with a number of situations. There would be a journal that would just go back and forth. Now, some children couldn't handle that. They'd be like, oh, what's being said about me? So it might not work. But for some, it does work. The child just takes a journal back and forth, straps shut. So the parents can say, oh, got to bed a little late last night. I'm sorry. Things didn't seem very good this morning. Or, oh, there's a worry coming up. It's the anniversary of whatever it could be. Tough things in that child's life. Things are a little rough here. Or we're getting toward Christmas and that signals some difficulty. Just communicating the teacher. We had a good day. Today, sorry, there was a lot of homework. Things seem a little unsettled. Just that back and forth can be so helpful to communicate. Any other ways that you found just that continual communication to be kind of a channel that is not cumbersome, but helpful? Parents sending in a coffee drink. I'll remember that one for when I talk to the teachers, which I do a good bit. All right. Oh, you said the parents sending it in. Yes, yes, yes. As a teacher, when the parents got that, teachers do like two things. They like apples, sort of. They're supposed to because, you know, apple with education, but they much prefer a latte or a coffee and donuts. So that's two things I've seen the eyes sparkle many times when, you know, the van's pulling in and here my mom runs in with some fresh donuts or sticky buns or just a little snack. That means more to the parents. To the teachers than you realize, probably. What about discussing, thinking of being open now with your teachers, what about discussing your child's past so the teacher understands some things? How do you feel about that? I'm going to get into some debatables here, I realize, but every situation is different, so I hope we can hear each other without feeling threatened.
What's the question again?
How do you feel about you as parents sharing some things about your child's past to the teacher so they understand what's going on better? Is that wise or not wise? Do you want your child to walk in with a blank sheet? I don't want any slant against my child. I want them to be normal, treated normal until.
I think it's very critical that the teacher knows the background of that child so she can understand the situation better.
Okay.
I can't imagine not.
Okay. See, I think many times it does not happen. And you need to navigate this, folks. I'm not telling you what to do. It would seem like, okay, you tell me some things you could share so other people can hear here. What are things you could share with a teacher? You don't have to go personal here, but I'm just broadly. That could be helpful for the teacher to understand that if they don't understand, it's going to likely create a problem down the road. Like what? Mm-hmm.
And it's to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
So because I have a problem and the teacher knows the problem, it's not saying to me, I can disrespect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, what else? Somebody else starting to say something?
I didn't say triggers.
Okay.
I'm just guessing here, our children are not at school age yet, so uh-huh. I feel somewhat vulnerable saying it, but the mm-hmm. teacher probably needs to understand that if the child's in a dark room, it's going to remind them of a certain happening.
Yes.
If the child sees a dog, and they're going to view that dog as mm-hmm. when it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
thank you so much. I think that is an extremely important one. If there are particular triggers that you see at home that you know will likely happen at school, then it's only fair to help the teacher understand. And you might say, well, the teacher has no idea that that's even a thing. That's unfortunately true. We do have, as a whole, poorly, and I'll say this very kindly, they're not a good group of people to say this to, but it's true. As a whole, we do have poorly informed teachers. Trauma care teachers. But I think we're doing better than 30 years ago. Yeah. Yes, what were you going to say?
Food awareness.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. One of the children can't have certain food.
Sure.
Classroom understands.
Yes.
The classroom.
That's good. And it's good if the teacher handles that in a way that's kind to everybody.
Mm-hmm. There's two extremes. One
yeah.
is you send your child in
right.
and you have the child be normal, treated normal,
yeah.
and not looked at any differently, so you don't let anybody know.
Mm-hmm.
It's setting up for issues. But the other side is making excuses for your child when maybe you could stand behind your child a little more,
mm-hmm.
behind the teacher,
mm-hmm.
not use the adoption or being adopted or
mm-hmm.
trauma as excuses for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Pretty much ditch here, isn't there? Sometimes it feels like the road's rather skinny. There's a lot of ditch on both sides. Each family needs to find their way with their situation. But yes, I think there are helpful things, like have been said, for the teacher to understand that these are things. Maybe it's a propensity to be dishonest. That probably needs to be honest with the school. From your perspective, possibly, I don't know where all you come from, maybe that dishonesty is basically a survival mechanism. That's how they survive. It's just right away, it's me against the world, especially neglected children. I'm sure you understand these things better than I do. Helping them understand. Encourage them not to create what I call setups. And of course, I talk to teachers a lot about this. Don't create setups. Don't ask children what they did. Tell them what they did. Or suddenly you have a lie. Now what do? You know, focus on the behavior. Avoid setups. Where the child is bound to be dishonest, and now you have a second layer of challenges. So just helping the teachers think about some of those things, I think, can be fair. You're not controlling them, just saying, here's a few things that we find. Maybe it's a tendency to hoard. I'm sure some of your children could be that way, especially neglected children, rad children. The tendency to hoard, it's me against the world again. I tend to take things, hide things, keep things. Well, helping the teacher understand that it's a tendency. It doesn't mean it's all okay. It's not quite like stealing for another child, possibly. That's another whole discussion we probably don't have time to discuss. But helping them see some of the things that they will likely encounter, I think, can be wise. At the same time, not creating suspicion that is unhealthy. And so you need to know your trust level there, of course, with your teacher. I would suggest to be careful about this comparison that does happen so easily. Did you ever feel, as parents, that, well, we don't face that at home? Or the school says, oh, we don't see that at school. I may just kindly say, it goes both ways. It just does. And I think we have to be so careful as parents that we don't say, oh, no. I don't know what you're talking about. We don't face that. And then the assumption from you as parents, at least that's how it's going to feel to the school, is we're doing something wrong. If only at school we could do like the parents do, we'd have this child that's so much better behaved. But it goes both ways. And of course, I caution the teachers when I talk to teachers. School sometimes has a structure. And it's different that the child behaves amazingly well. And remember one mom, she said, oh, I just wish I'd have that sweet little boy when he gets in the van. But things just fly apart. And at school, oh, he's such a sweet little fellow. And I knew the situation quite well because he was in our school. And he was a sweet little fellow. Now, what's the tendency for the teachers to say what?
Poor parents.
Yeah. And if you would have some structure, like we do at school, and some rules and policies, guess what? You'd have them at home too. Rather than the teacher saying, guess what? He can hang on to himself for that long and his emotions are her emotions, but guess when it's over, and thankfully that's at 3 o'clock. That's when he just can't handle it anymore. And guess what? We all sort of behave a little differently at home than we do in public, right? And so I just really want to caution us to not, it could be true that if the school would handle it better, things would go better. That could be true. But when we do that in an accusatory way and kind of blame the school that you just don't know how to handle my child and that's why you got all these problems, it's not helpful. Even though there might be some truth to that. But just be careful with that. All right, I want to get to wrap this up very quickly. And I know you would not want this to happen, parents. But if your child senses that there's tension between how you see it and the school sees it, you're putting your child at a huge disadvantage. All right? If they know that, well, dad doesn't, mom doesn't think, that how they don't think I should have been punished. They don't think I should have stayed in at recess. They think I should have this. They don't. It is going to happen that you and the school don't always agree. We've talked a lot about that. That's at some level going to happen. In some ways, it's okay and inevitable. But if your child is sort of caught between the two, sort of almost a loyalty, is the teacher right? Are the parents right? Don't put them in that position. They don't need that on their shoulders yet to have to navigate who's right. It doesn't mean you always agree with the school, but it means that working with your child, you are careful when you do disagree. I don't think schools should call to agree on everything. That's impossible. I would not want my parents to have always, I was right. I wasn't always right. Parents can acknowledge that. I should acknowledge that. But the child shouldn't be caught in the middle of that discussion. Student-facing, child-facing should be a level of respect and carefulness. And if they sense there wasn't full agreement, at least in a way that helps them understand how to navigate disagreements rather than creating tension and bad feelings. Another huge one, and I don't quite know what to say about this one, but you can understand this tension, is talking to people outside of the solution. I don't know what to really say about that, but you talk about losing trust with your school board and with your teachers. Just be careful. I know we need to unload sometimes. We have a sibling, we have a parent, we have a best friend. I'm not condemning that. But do be careful that in the community, you're not just talking and then you talk and then you talk and you complain and you fuss. And after a while, that does come back around to the teachers and to the board. And then, parents, what grieves me is so often the tension is up here. All right? Trust is broken. The tension, the discussion is up here. And this focus is lost because we don't trust each other. We don't agree with each other. We're frustrated with each other. There's gossip out there. Of course, this can go in all directions, but I'm talking to you as parents. And the needs of the child really aren't discussed too much because they're trying to figure out the problems up here. And so the more we drop things and spread things around in frustration, the more the attention is actually pulled away from the needs of the child. And it becomes the tension among the adults. Just a couple little quick things. If you meet with the school, here's what I would really encourage you to do, is express gratitude freely. This is hard to do. When there's frustration, it's hard to. But I think it's beautiful when a parent can sit down with the teacher or the board or both, and say, and start the meeting out, when it's your turn to talk, and say, First of all, I want to just say how deeply grateful we are that we can send our child to your school, or that you are willing to accept our child. It means so much. We're not doing this alone. Yes, we don't always agree. We're here to talk about that. But I want you to know up front, we really appreciate it. I hope you can mean that. But when meetings start out with tension right away, I just encourage you to be very grateful. Because I think most teachers would tell you this. They're a lot more insecure than you realize. I taught school pretty many years, and I still struggle with being insecure. And when a parent's not happy with how I'm handling something, I'm sorry to say, teachers, parents, we have thin skin. We really do. See, it's not my children. I don't have to do this. And that's exactly what teachers are doing more and more. I am seeing this. And it's getting talked about with people who've taught many years, saying, what's going on? Why can't we keep teachers? I don't know what all the reasons are. But unfortunately, sometimes part of the reason is, I'm done. I can't do anything right anyhow. Or at least I can't do enough right. And I'm just tired of the pressure. Guess what? It's not my child. It's not my problems. I'm not teaching. And I hope I'm okay saying this. I'm just going to throw this in. If there are situations in schools where it's known that this is just a tough parent and they can hardly get teachers, and this happens, I know you don't want to be responsible for that. But I'm just begging you as parents to be extremely gracious people and be very appreciative. That doesn't mean you ignore all the problems, but be careful that you don't help create a situation in which it's tough to teach here because, whew, you know, you get a lot of phone calls. You do a lot of things wrong. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. I'm just saying this very kindly. If we're going to partner well with a school, we have to be a joy to work with. Does that make sense? We have to be a joy, not a dread, to work with. And unfortunately, we teachers are just a pretty touchy group of people. And too quickly, we're like, okay, I don't have children. I don't know. Many young people feel very insecure in being teachers. It doesn't take a lot for them to say, okay, I don't know. I know we need to grow a thicker skin, but we're not doing so well always with that. And last of all, just encourage us to go through proper channels. And I want to open this to discussion for a few minutes. Go through proper channels. And this varies in schools, I realize this. Some, the proper channels go to the administration. Some is go to the teacher. But just encourage you to know what are the proper channels when you have a concern. It's different to ask the teacher a question than to almost give a concern. Do you hear the difference? So we need to ask a question, like, okay, my child has a lot of homework. Can you help me understand what's happening? That's a little different than a concern. Last year, my child didn't have homework. I mean, what's going on? Now this year, it's homework, homework, homework. And where's she at? I've talked to a few other moms, and they're all saying the same thing. Oh, boy, now we're really in the ditch, right? Those need to go to administration, typically. Concerns. Teachers shouldn't have to bear that. That's a question. But think about what are the proper channels for the particular situation. And that does vary slightly. Some schools have policies as to who gets talked to first, and that needs to be respected. I was asked to briefly mention bridge builders. I'm sure a lot of you do not know about this. I put some brochures back on the table. This is a fairly new ministry, somewhat growing out of a little bit Shepherd's Pathway, somewhat Mountain Trails, both organizations I have a little connection to. But I do work with this one more particular. So Bridge Builders is simply a ministry to work with schools and parents. That's just kind of bottom line. Sometimes when there's a lot of misunderstandings or just simply a third party to try to think through a way forward. So you can read it. I'll put those. There are some back there on the table. Feel free to pick it up. It is just a ministry, like I said, to help navigate not necessarily problems, but navigate school life.